Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net. This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
America is as divided as it has been in 150 years.
Politics is symptomatic of the culture.
They don't have a personal relationship with Christ.
We've been sacramentalized, but not evangelized.
Why should Washington listen to us when our own house is in disarray?
The Church's greatest riches are her people.
Share the contagious joy of being a friend of Christ.
Story after story after story. Story of people who have had inexplicable healings.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That's beautifully said, Al.
Thanks for your voice for liberty.
It's like a homecoming each time on your program.
It occurred to me that you've thought these things through at a deep level.
Let's build the church, and then we'll bless the nations.
And good afternoon, and welcome to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Matthew Bunsen, sitting in for Al today. I am a senior contributor for EWTN News. I also work at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology and Catholic Distance University. It is always a distinct privilege, an honor, to fill in for Al when he's out. And I have to thank right from the start his incredible staff of producers who make all of this very simple. And once again, as I always say, proving that virtually anyone can do his show with the kind of staff that he has. In this hour, we're going to be looking into one of the curious and disturbing trends that some of America's most iconic cities are facing real revivals in terms of their finances, in terms of media, in terms of jobs. And yet, because of high rents, many middle-class families are moving out. What is driving childlessness in our cities, and can anything be done about it? We're going to talk with Bradford Wilcox, who's a senior fellow for the Institute for Family Studies and director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia, to sort of dig into the various sociological reasons from a very academic standpoint. We're also, in this hour, going to sort of be touching on one of the peripheral topics, and major topic, you could argue, and that is the anniversary of Humani Vitae. I spoke in the previous hour with Dr. Janet Smith, and in this hour, I'll be talking with Dr. John Grabowski about self-giving, the heart of Humani Vitae, and its role in helping us to sort of rebuild culture, a contraceptive culture, and I think we're going to see some interesting parallels between what he has to say and childlessness in America's cities. Also, we're going to visit with Solène Tavier, the European correspondent for the National Catholic Register, to talk about a recent mystery in the Vatican, as well as some changes at the Sala Stampa in Rome. But first, here's Steve Clark with the news.
Thanks, Matthew. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, July 25th. It's the Feast of St. James the Apostle. Today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at CharityMobile.com. Accused child sex trafficker and Manhattan financier Jeffrey Epstein is back in his jail cell after being briefly hospitalized.
They found him semi-conscious in that cell at MCC, which is one of the facilities here in Manhattan.
NBC News investigative correspondent Tom Winter says Epstein was found Wednesday evening in the fetal position on the floor of his cell with marks on his neck. Investigator speculation ranges from a suicide attempt to a possible assault, and he's being kept on a suicide watch. Epstein, who has pleaded not guilty to federal conspiracy and sex trafficking charges, is back in court July 21st. The new Secretary of Defense was formally introduced with full honors by the President and Vice President. Secretary Mark Esper noted that the global security environment has become more complex and challenging.
China and Russia seek to displace the United States and shift the balance of power in their favor. And terrorist organizations like ISIS look for new safe havens to plot against the West.
Esper is an Army vet and was a Secretary of the Army when Trump tapped him to run the Pentagon. The acting director of ICE is defending his agency's handling of migrant detention centers. During a House hearing, Matthew Albanth says the border crisis is busting the budgets of immigration departments and agencies.
I come to ask for your assistance in providing ICE the funding it desperately needs to address not only the ongoing humanitarian crisis, but also the concurrent national security and public safety crises.
California Democrat Lucille Roybal-Allard criticized substandard and humane conditions at the migrant detention facilities.
We continue to get alerts about detention facilities that do not meet ICE's minimum standards, but are nevertheless allowed to continue operating.
Albans calls it a national security and humanitarian crisis. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
Welcome to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Matthew Bunsen, filling in for Al today. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, some of America's most iconic cities are experiencing a real revival in terms of finance and media and other industries. But we are also seeing a complete collapse into a kind of demographic desert in terms of families. A remarkable piece in Atlantic magazine, The Atlantic, called The Future of the City is Childless. That tells us something about what is missing from the urban rebirth. And to talk about that, I'm joined by Brad Wilcox, a senior fellow for the Institute for Family Studies and director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia. Brad, welcome.
Matt, it's good to be here today.
So The Atlantic, of course, I know that you're very familiar with this piece, is published something, as I mentioned, The Future of the City is Childless. How bad is the situation, actually?
Well, we do see that our fertility rate has hit a record low in the country as a whole. It's about 1.72 right now in the United States. That is about 1.72 babies per woman on average, which is below the replacement level of 2.1 kids on average. So that means that we're not having enough babies today in the U.S. to sustain ourselves long term. And fertility rates are especially low in our nation's cities. I think that's part of the reason that Atlantic article was written, so recently.
And in places like Japan, the situation is even more dire in the cities. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think the cities, both actually in Japan but also in the U.S., have some unique challenges. The biggest, of course, is just the cost of real estate. It costs a lot of money to rent, not to mention to buy a home. And so what we see is that people are hesitant to get married. They're hesitant to have kids. That's part of the story that explains this low level of fertility in American cities. The other thing I think that's also an issue here in part is education. It's often it's hard to find decent public schools that could serve, you know, your kids when you've got to pay for private schools or Catholic schools, and that's an expense. And then the final thing I think we're seeing in a number of cities, including places like Baltimore and New York, is growing social disorder, where parents are just, or young adults are afraid to have kids or have more kids because, you know, things seem more out of control in terms of homelessness or crime.
And the idea, I live in Washington, D.C., and one of the rules here, sort of the rules of thumb, is that a couple that gets married, you stay in an apartment, and then you have kids, and then you move out of the city, simply because for all of the different factors that you've just mentioned. Has this always been the case, though? Because I can seem to remember a time when cities were filled with families.
There's always been plenty of folks who have left the cities in search of better and bigger housing in the suburbs. So that's a long-run, you know, phenomenon. But what is, I think, different is fewer and fewer middle-class families are remaining in the cities just because the costs are so high and some of the social issues we've just talked about seem daunting to them. Like in Washington, for instance, probably you notice now that there's a lot more people just kind of sitting around or standing around smoking marijuana, and that can be a little disconcerting for someone thinking about raising children.
Not to mention proving something of a hindrance and actually finding someone that you would want to spend your life with.
Correct.
So we have a set of social problems. We have the cost of actually raising a family in a city. What are some of the things that we can do to actually start to fix this?
Well, you know, I think one obvious solution to some of these challenges is thinking of ways to change zoning regulations to make it easier to build higher density apartments and condos to make housing more affordable. I think another thing is to be thinking more about expanding school choice as a way to make raising kids in our cities not only more affordable but more attractive for people who are, for instance, Catholic. And then I think, too, continuing to encourage our, you know, our mayors and our police departments to pursue the kinds of strategies that police departments have pursued in places like New York for a long time to keep crime and disorder at a minimum.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the attendant social problems that emerge in a city that is filled effectively with single people or with married couples without any children?
Well, I just think that, you know, it can be hard to find, you know, friends who are raising kids. And, you know, the transition into parenthood for particularly the first child is really traumatic for a lot of folks, hard on your marriage for a lot of folks. And so that can, you know, be a lot easier to manage that transition when you have other couples with kids who are kind of, you know, have embarked on the same kind of adventure that you have as a new parent.
Mm-hmm.
So not having a lot of other parents around, you know, so if you are in a city, I think it's important to try to figure out a way to meet other parents, you know, who are at a kind of a similar life stage to help you navigate the challenges of you know, raising a family in urban America.
What role can religious institutions play in this? Parishes have always been in the cities, especially with mass immigration, as we saw in the 19th century with the Irish, the Germans, and the Italians. Those were really important for families to find a haven. But that seems to be changing today, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but I think churches really stress religious education, that stress, you know, doing feasts well, that stress processions, that kind of create, you know, things that are great vehicles for religious life for families are the ones that tend to do okay and attract families to them. So I think it's sort of being intentional about, you know, providing basic services, but also kind of doing things that are sort of dramatic, liturgically and otherwise, to sort of appeal to and attract families with kids.
Mm-hmm. So what are the potential health issues that could be emerging because of this situation?
I think, you know, long-term, because so many of our young adults live in American cities and metro areas, you know, if we don't do a better job of encouraging and sustaining childbearing and family life more generally, we're going to see, you know, long-term declines in the number of men and women who are in working ages, which is going to impact our economy negatively. You know, our economy will be less dynamic, and we'll face greater difficulties in funding programs like Social Security and Medicare with a shrinking population of working-age Americans. So I mean, that's just one of the problems I think we're going to be facing, you know, America, if we don't do a better job of moving back towards a replacement fertility rate.
So can we look to Europe as sort of the canary in the coal mine, to use the phrase, for where
we can look
are seriously
to Europe
headed?
Even more. We can look even more though, to a country like Japan that experiences now a population loss, you know, of more than 400,000 people every year. So, I mean, they're losing more than a million people every 3 years in Japan because of long-term low fertility. So, lest we want to end up like Japan, where you've seen economic stagnation, you've seen lots of people dying alone without any kin to really tend to or care for them, and sort of an epidemic of, you know, low marriage, sexlessness, and other kinds of interesting modern pathologies spring up. We need to think about and act, you know, to shore up family life in our cities and elsewhere in the country.
In Japan, one of the phenomena that has become very commonplace is the lack of interest in the other sex on the part, especially of Japanese men. Why is that happening?
You know, I think it's a couple of things that are in play here. One is just the fact that oftentimes there aren't enough decent paying jobs for young men, and so that limits their appeal as potential mates. I think people are devoting way too much time to electronic devices, social media, gaming, and, you know, pornography and other things that can kind of like, reduce their interest in the opposite sex and their ability to interact with the opposite sex. And, you know, there are others more subtle factors that I'm not really even aware of that I think, are in play here and we need to figure out, because again, this is not a sustainable model that we're seeing, in East Asia, and much of Southern and Eastern Europe as well. I mean, fertility is just so low that these countries are going to kind of collapse in on themselves, demographically speaking.
In the previous hour, I spoke with Dr. Janet Smith about Humani Vitae and its legacy, its important legacy. And one of the things that we touched upon was the fact that among millennials especially, the idea of the dating project, that you actually have to ask someone out on a date, that you have to take them somewhere and have a conversation. From your standpoint, as somebody who researches, from an academic standpoint, family studies and the marriage project, how are we at this point in terms of socialization among the young?
Yeah, no, I think both of them revise, a whole set of traditions and obviously adjust them for the 21st century when it comes to dating. To encourage young men to take more initiative in this domain and to put themselves out there to risk rejection. And to encourage young adults to think more intentionally about their relationships in their 20s as potentially, you know, leading them to marriage. So there's a lot of work to be done when it comes to strengthening kind of our openness, our willingness, and our dedication to reviving the importance of dating in the 21st century.
So what are some of your, as an academic, this is maybe an odd question to ask you to give dating advice, but what are some of your actual suggestions for a young person who's in a city and despairing a bit at the social scene, especially in what we're seeing now is, to use the phrase, a hookup culture, or one where it can be a challenge to find people who share your moral vision of how you're supposed to live your life?
Yeah, I think a couple of things are helpful here. One is to be involved in a church community. And second is to be volunteering, you know, doing something that you think is important and valuable. You probably will meet good people in that venue. A third thing is to sort of ask your friends, you know, be more deliberate about sort of saying, hey, do you know anyone that would be good, you know, a good boyfriend or girlfriend for me potentially? And sort of use your social networks to, you know, be more intentional about meeting people. So those are three ideas that I think can help. It's also the case, too, that today about 40% of relationships are formed online. So, mm-hmm. You know, there are Catholic dating sites, too, that are worth signing up for. You might find someone, you know, if you're living in D.C., for instance, it might be someone, you know, just a town over, so to speak, in Alexandria who would be a great match, but you're not going to meet them through your normal, you know, avenue. So I think being open to that is also a good thing today, too.
Understood. A dose of prudence might be called for here, too. Well, Brad Wilcox, yes. Thank you so much. Senior fellow at the Institute for Family Studies at the University of Virginia. When we come back, we talk further here on Al Crestas.
Are you tired of investing in the culture of death? Would you like your investments to be in line with the Catholic Church? Would you like an advisor who is a fiduciary and who understands retirement issues while sharing and respecting your Catholic beliefs? Contact Joseph Vitale at American Retirement Advisors at 855-756-5700. Helping you preserve your retirement while preserving your beliefs and values. Call Joe at 855-756-5700.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
We know how much you love Ave Maria Radio, so please consider joining us in our Care to Share program. It's easy. We send you 10 business-size cards that give you all the great ways that someone can listen to Ave Maria Radio, and you just give them away. Share them with those you love and those who would really benefit from our great programming. For more information, go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to find the Care to Share program link. That's AveMariaRadio.net, Community, and Care to Share.
Hello, this is Steve Ray. We'd like to invite you to join us for an Advent pilgrimage to Italy. We're also going to give you plenty of time for Advent shopping at the markets in Rome. And it's all decorated and a beautiful time to visit. We're going to see all the holy sites and churches there with the wonderful guide Liz Lev. So join us in Italy. You'll still be home in plenty of time for Christmas this December. God bless you.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link. This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, it is no secret that the Latin Rite Church is experiencing some particularly confusing and painful times. In light of this, the Eastern Catholic Churches may have something to offer our Latin Rite brethren.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
Do you know the best way to get kids to obey? Remain calm. In the words of St. John Bosco, quote, show your children that uncontrolled emotion plays no part in your actions. They will respect you for that, and their respect will prompt their obedience, end quote. It turns out research agrees. In fact, studies show that the louder you yell, the less kids listen to what you say, and the more they just treat you like you're crazy. That might cause kids to keep their heads down around you, but it won't help them learn from you. Remaining calm helps you become the parent your kids want to learn from instead of just avoid. Need help developing calm discipline strategies? Check out Parenting with Grace, the Catholic parent guide to raising almost perfect kids. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Matthew Bunsen, filling in for Al today. Well, there has been an intense amount of speculation surrounding an obscure case in Rome that actually has involved the Vatican. It has raised the speculation about bones of missing children. It has all of the elements of a true mystery, and it has drawn the focus of a lot of global media. Also, at the Vatican, there's a new vice director of the Holy See Press Office. Why should we care, you ask? Well, we're going to find out. To discuss this, I'm joined by Solène Tadier, who is the European correspondent for the National Catholic Register, and it's always a pleasure to talk with her. Welcome, Solène.
Hello, Matthew. Thank you for having me.
I know that you are based in Rome, but you are originally from France. So I need to ask, how are you finding covering a beat that extends essentially across an entire continent?
Oh, well, it is such a challenge, actually, but it is an honor for me to cover the whole very, very various topics linked to Christianity in Europe. And it allows me to make people rediscover the incredible richness of Christianity in Europe and to make them understand that it is the very basis of our whole civilization. So it is a very, very great mission for me.
Well, so one of your tasks as correspondent, of course, is to cover what's happening in Rome. And recently there was a search for the remains of a 15-year-old girl who's been missing for a number of years. Her name was Emanuela Orlandi. And why was this such of intense interest to not just the Holy See, but also to police and to much in the world media?
Well, let's say that Emanuela Orlandi has been missing for 36 years now. So the most incredible thing it has been a totally mysterious disappearance. So there are a lot of conspiracy theories around this case. Some people think that the Vatican is responsible. Other people say that the mafia is responsible. Other people say that it was the Turkish terrorist that kidnapped her to get the release of the terrorist Adja that attempt to assassinate Saint John Paul II. So the conspiracy theories are so incredibly spread in Rome, and so it is a case that is arousing a lot of interest within the media sphere and all around the world, actually.
Well, is there an additionally intense interest in this, in part because it allows the media to sort of drag the Vatican back into some sort of a potential murder based on what they're theorizing, at the very least a missing persons here?
Oh, yes, definitely. Every case that touches the Vatican arouses a lot of interest within the media, because once they have an occasion to shed light on the actions of the Vatican, you know, it is a priceless opportunity for secular media to talk about the mystery that the Vatican seems to be nowadays. So yes, it explains the huge mystery. And today, this morning, the Adja himself published, I don't know if you saw that, Matthew, but Adja published an open letter sent to worldwide press, saying that it was the guilt was not from was not the Vatican but the CIA. So it is another conspiracy theory. So it is now it's now viral. It is something incredible. So it's, this poor little girl is crystallizing an all hysterical theories, and it happened at the same period, right after the attempt assassination against Saint John Paul II. So now people say that it could be related to the third secret of Fatima. So you know, you can imagine that it's all mysteries and secrets. Aroused a lot of interest among the faithful as well as among the worldwide press, actually.
Well, I'm surprised they haven't also involved the surprising death of Pope John Paul I in 1978, given that that was also had, over the years, has been surrounded with mysteries and wild speculation, all of it subsequently disproven, especially after the fall of the Soviet Union. But for a matter of record, on July 11th, the Vatican did open two of the tombs, is that right, in the cemetery of the Teutonic College?
Yes, absolutely. The Vatican opened the two tombs, belonging to Princess Sophie von Hohenlohe and Duchess Charlotte Frederica, and they died in the mid 19th century, and they were located, as you said, in the cemetery of the Teutonic College, adjacent to the Vatican City State. So, but they were found to be completely empty of any human remains. So after that, the Vatican just opened another ossuary that was unknown until now, and they actually found like 1,000 bones that could belong to adults as well as minors. Mm-hmm. So it could be easily. So we cannot know now if they belong to Orlandi, but they discovered more than 1,000 bones. That could belong like to a dozen people, no more than that, because if we know that there are about 206 bones in an adult body, a handful of people could easily number over 1,000 bones.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly.
So
and
according to Vatican spokesman Alessandro Gisotti, there will be an in-depth morphological analysis, and the research will continue this Saturday, July 27.
Right. And lost sometimes in all of this speculation and effort to sort of drag the Vatican into this is that the object of this whole investigation is to find out what happened to this young woman so many years ago.
Yes, absolutely. Gisotti pointed out, the Vatican accepted to open this tomb and to make these researches, not because the Vatican thinks someone within the Vatican is guilty, but just to prove its goodwill to Orlandi's family. It is a gesture of goodwill, of good faith, and humanity that has been done here. Everyone is trying to shed light on what happened, and the mystery is still complete right now.
Well, you mentioned Alessandro Gisotti, who at that time was interim Vatican spokesperson. He has subsequently been replaced by Matteo Bruni, and apologies if this sounds a little bit inside baseball to everyone, but who is actually the Vatican spokesperson matters, especially today, especially in the pontificate of Pope Francis. Being a spokesperson for the Vatican can be rather challenging. I know that you cover a lot of these things, so you can personally testify to that. We had today the announcement that a vice director of the Holy See Press Office has been named. What do we know?
Yes. So let's say that communication is a very, very important topic for the Vatican. The Vatican is now leading a whole reform of its different structures. And for the first time, let's mention the fact that we have a non-journalist as the director of the Vatican Press Office, because Matteo Bruni is a British-born layman. He's not a journalist. He knows the Vatican very well because he has been serving for more than a decade right now. He's been responsible for handling accreditations and for managing logistics during papal trips. But he knows the Vatican very well, and I think he was appointed to be a very reliable person to guide these many journalists right now leading the Vatican. So we have, like you say, the new deputy director of the Holy See Press Office, Christiane Murray. So she's a Brazilian journalist, and she's a woman. So it seems to be another gesture from Pope Francis to show that he values the women at very important roles in the Vatican, even though she's replacing Paloma Garcia, so another woman, she used to be the former Vatican deputy spokesman. She used to work for the Vatican Radio since 1995, so she has a great experience. As we can see that the Vatican is now trying to appoint very professional, highly professional people at the head of the communication. It is designed to organize a better synergy between the various branches of the Vatican communication. Andrea Tornielli, who is now the main editorial advisor of this new dicastery for the communication, explained that the aim of this reform is to put the different outlets of the Vatican under one unique dicastery, which doesn't mean that we are all the same, the journalists are all the same within the Vatican, but they try to create something more able to face the increasingly the new stakes of an increasingly digital age, so the Vatican needs to modernize, and so it demands both a rethinking of the Holy See's information system and a commitment to reorganize the information while appreciating what has been developed in the past within the Holy See.
So is there an assumption that we can make that there's going to be a much more unified editorial position coming out of the Holy See? We see the influence of Tornielli. We see the influence of the Dicastery's director, Dr. Paolo Ruffini. But is it also safe to say that there's going to be more of an embedding of the Holy See's press office, the Sala Stampa, in sort of Vatican media? And if that's the case, what does that tell us?
Yes, I mean, in the past, we could say that, yes, the powers were very shared in a very vertical manner. And now we say that the power is distributed in many different hands. And it is a good sign. I mean, it shows that the Vatican wants to rethink completely the way he deals with information, with the modern world. So I think it could be a good sign for the Vatican communication. And yes, I think it is the fact that these people that have very different backgrounds were appointed. I think it is a sign that of the Vatican's will to make this change.
Very good. Well, Solène Tadier, European correspondent for the National Catholic Register, thanks so much. Coming up, we're going to talk Humanae Vitae again with Dr. John Grabowski. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
The Union Electricians and Contractors of IBEW 252 and NECA appreciate the difference our public school teachers make every day. We believe teachers and students deserve to be safe in the schools where they work and learn, and that's one reason we train union electricians to the highest standards of safety and quality. When school districts hire union electrical contractors, they're getting the most highly trained electricians available. That's important because faulty electrical systems can cause fires. Electrical instructor Chris Parks describes the union difference.
We don't just teach people how to be electricians. We teach them how to be the best craftsman available. We have expectations that everyone's going to put out the best quality product that we can for our customers in the safest possible manner.
IBEW 252 and NECA, training the highest quality electricians at our school so they can build the safest electrical systems for yours. Visit IBEWNECA252.org.
You're listening to Ave Maria Radio.
Ave Maria Radio.
The Wine Palace in Livonia is a proud sponsor of Ave Maria Radio. The Wine Palace is a family-owned business for over 60 years where customers come in for great service. The 9,000-square-foot store includes a humidor, specialty wine room, deli, and a rare and collectible spirits room. We have the largest selection of spirits in the state at the most competitive prices. Ask for one of the brothers, Cliff or Kelly, and thank them for their strong support of Catholic Radio. Delivery is available. Please visit the Wine Palace at I-96 in Middlebelt or at winepalace.net.
The Catholic Catechism tells us that an evil end can corrupt an objectively good act. Our Lord pointed this out when he spoke of Pharisees praying and fasting, both objectively good acts, in order to be seen by men, a morally corrupt end which therefore corrupts all the actions. On the other hand, a good intention cannot justify an objectively evil action. One cannot turn fornication, a morally evil action in and of itself, by participating in it, even to save a life. Fornication is always wrong because it involves a disorder of the will, a moral evil. It is an error, the Catholic Catechism tells us, therefore, to judge an act merely by considering the intention that inspired it or the circumstances such as social pressure or emergency. The end never justifies the means. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. On July 25, 1968, Pope Paul VI issued the encyclical letter Humanae Vitae, which means of human life. In that relatively short document, which you can find at priestsforlife.org, he outlines the Church's vision of human life, marriage, and the connection between human love and the creative action of God. Love and life are two very simple and very similar words, and they represent two gifts that go together. Love leads to life. It does not close it off. Love welcomes life. It is not afraid of it. Love and life go together because ultimately they are simply two aspects of the one God. One of the best ways you can observe this anniversary of Humanae Vitae is to read it. Go to priestsforlife.org and you will find the text along with helpful commentary. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
This is Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Matthew Bunsen, sitting in for Al today. In our last hour, I had a great chance to talk with Dr. Janet Smith about Humanae Vitae at 51. I was eager to continue this conversation on the concept of self-giving, the heart of Humani Vitae, with John Grabowski, Associate Professor of Moral Theology and Ethics at the Catholic University of America, who is, I think it's safe to say, one of the world's leading experts on Humani Vitae and also on moral theology. John, welcome.
Matthew, thank you so much for having me.
Well, here we are at the 51st anniversary. Probably safe to say there's a lot less fanfare than there was for the 50th anniversary. But I asked Janet Smith earlier, and I want to ask you the same question. Sort of where are we with Humani Vitae, at least in terms of its acceptance in culture?
Oh, boy. I think in some ways we're farther away than we were in 1968, as bad as that was. But in other ways, I think there really are a lot of signs of hope, because it's fascinating to look at how much data there is from medical science, from biology, from the social sciences, which tell us that the teaching is right, and that it's true, and that it's good for the human person, and for human flourishing, and for marriage. So, for those who have ears to hear and eyes to see, there are actually a lot of signs of hope. And I like to tell the story that in the fall of 2016, when the WinGuards Institute rolled out their Catholic Scholars Statement with 150 signatures criticizing Humani Vitae and saying why it was wrong and basically dusting off all of the 1968 arguments, with Janet's help and leadership, we managed to, in very short time, pull together a counter statement, introduce it at Catholic University. The same day, we had, at the time of the press conference, we had 590 signatures. And of those signatures, we had more signatories from doctors and scientists than all of the signatories of the WinGuard statement. Within 2 weeks, the number of signers from Catholic scholars had almost doubled on that list. So clearly, for people who are paying attention, you know, the evidence is there.
And that's an important distinction to make, because it one of the things that has become clear, as we see with other issues in the life of the church, I'm thinking in particular of things like the ordination of women and the abandonment of the church's teachings on same sex and the human person. There seems almost a generational divide that they're among really active, growing numbers of scholars and scientists who explore these things, that they're moving in one direction, and that other group seems to be, I won't say that they're dinosaurs, I don't want to be unkind in that way, but there is a sense that this is a lost argument, isn't it?
In terms of the intellectual evidence, again, scientifically, philosophically, theologically, I really do think so. It is not 1968 anymore. The evidence is clear, and the further reflection that we've been given on the part of theologians and certainly the church in the magisterium of John Paul II and Benedict and now Francis has really deepened our ability to understand and receive the prophetic nature of Pope Paul VI's teaching in Humani Vitae, the inseparable connection between life and love and God's plan. We have a deeper understanding of why the Church has always taught and defended that truth.
And one of the topics of a brilliant thing that you wrote on self-giving, the heart of Humani Vitae, the Church's teachings on sexuality as being based on the dignity of the human person, creating the image and likeness of God, with everything that that entails, but also the responsibility that that brings.
Sure. This teaching really does reflect, flow from, and defend human dignity because, again, the way God's designed for us, we are designed as integral human creatures, body and soul. So when we give our body, we're giving, as John Paul II often said, the whole of ourselves. The body expresses the person. And our capacity to give life as a man or a woman and to become a mother or a father is integrally connected to that. So it's written into our very bodies, it's written into our very flesh, that we're created for that kind of self-gift. And when we reject one of those fundamental meanings of either life or love, we're not only thwarting the Creator's plan, we're demeaning ourselves and demeaning our own dignity as human beings called to love.
I had a conversation earlier in this hour with Brad Wilcox on answering the question, what's driving childlessness in America's cities? And I know his academic studies have found a variety of different sociological, economic reasons for the death of families in cities today. How can we help people understand the connection between that and a contraceptive culture?
Well, I mean, the crisis of fatherlessness in many of our families and in many of our cities is very much a fruit of the sexual revolution and the disorder unleashed by widespread adoption of contraception. So, again, we can help people see that connection and see the way in which the sexual revolution has demeaned and devastated women rather than empowered them. It's done incalculable harm to children, who are the greatest victims, as Mary Eberstadt has argued, not just through abortion, but through the suffering caused by divorce, through all the toll that the sexual revolution has taken on our families. And the sexual revolution has infantilized men, because men no longer need to commit themselves in marriage to gain sexual access to women because of the promise of risk-free sex that contraception has given. So there's a lot of factors that have gone into our current epidemic of fatherless families and broken families, but certainly the jet fuel of the modern sexual revolution, the 20th century iteration of the sexual revolution, which is oral contraception, has played an enormous part.
And is there now in culture almost a point of no return, or are you optimistic, given the anti-family, the promotion of abortion and contraception as just almost the baseline for relationships?
I mean, I was just at a symposium of Catholic scholars on family at Notre Dame last week, and one of the things, especially listening to someone like Mike Aquilina, that really came through is just how closely our culture parallels that of ancient Rome.
Yes.
In terms of the disregard for life, the disregard for marriage, the plunging fertility rates in ancient Rome, but for the growing Christian population, the parallels are enormous. But look at what happened through the first great evangelization which the church carried out in its opening centuries. They changed the culture around them. How do you change a culture? You change its cult. Our word culture, of course, comes from the Latin cultus, which means to either cultivate or to worship. So we can change a culture by changing that which the culture worships, and changing our gods of pleasure, power, and wealth to the God of life who created us. So do I have hope for our culture? Yes, but the hope is the new evangelization.
Yes.
Because that's how the church makes its greatest impact and has throughout history.
And toward those little seismic readings that we can pick up on, in my conversation with Dr. Janet Smith, I raised the point that among millennials, there seems to be a wider acceptance of NFP. There seems to be as well a movement away from contraception. Are you seeing that as well?
Definitely. And I'm in some cases for reasons of morality or religion, but in some cases millennials, they're trying to eat organic, they're trying to protect the environment. So for them, not putting mechanical, chemical, or other devices and agents into their bodies fit with that. So there can be all kinds of reasons why people are giving natural methods of birth regulation a new look. And again, it's one of the signs of hope, I think, and an encouraging sign in the midst of our culture.
So what is a typical way that you utilize to explain the church's teachings on human sexuality, on the dignity of the person, of self-giving, at a time when so many young people really don't just have the vocabulary to comprehend much of what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think this has been the great gift to the modern church of St. John Paul II. Pope Paul VI rearticulated what the church's teaching had always been and used this language of an inseparable connection between the unitive and procreative ends or meanings of conjugal love. But he didn't really unpack that and fully explain the why, which is why we argued in that essay that you referred to, self-gift is really the heart of Humani Vitae. Humani Vitae points us toward and is, in a sense, fully elaborated in the teaching of John Paul II, because he shows us that, again, fertility is an integral part of the person. And one way to connect with people who are having a difficult time understanding is to help them see the harms that contraception can do, the way in which contraception is especially an attack on a woman's body and her unique pattern of fertility. Contraception aims to render women infertile so that they can be more sexually available to men, rather than cooperating with and in harmony with the unique pattern of a woman's fertility. So again, contraception is contra the dignity of the person, particularly women. Contraception undermines the totality of self-gift that married love, that sexual intercourse, is meant to convey. So getting people to take another look at what do our bodies mean? What does it mean to give one's body to another person? What does that communicate? John Paul II's whole teaching within the Theology of the Body Catechesis, which Pope Francis has echoed, on the communicability of the body, the language of the body, which is spoken in a unique way in conjugal love, in married sexual love, that gift intrinsically unites both the expression of love, the totality of self-gift, and openness to the gift of life. When we treat our bodies as an integral part of who we are, contraception is really Manichaean. It's really dualist in a lot of ways. And getting people to take a look at that, I think, can, again, cause them to rethink maybe their stance on this issue.
Perfect. Dr. John Grabowski, Associate Professor of Moral Theology and Ethics at the Catholic University of America, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Matthew.
When we come back, I have a few final thoughts. We go from Emperor Augustus to Humani Vitae. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Beth, why is our health insurance so expensive? Our premium and deductible are so high. Plus, I don't want my family to support a company that doesn't share our values.
Kim, there is another option. Check out CMF Curo. It's an affordable Catholic healthcare ministry where members share their medical costs in community, and it's pro-life. We joined last year and have saved thousands, all without compromising our values. Just go to MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
CMF Curo sounds exactly like what our family needs.
Yeah, that's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Fire on the Earth, Peter Herbeck.
Jesus said, if you're going to follow me, the world's going to hate you because it hated me first. Friends, you know, we're living at a time when the world is getting more and more offended by God, by the teaching of Jesus, by Jesus' understanding of reality, by the church's teaching about all kinds of things, about what's a man, what's a woman, what's a family, when does life begin, who has the power to take life, who doesn't, all this stuff. Society's celebrating things that Jesus condemns, and society's getting angry at the church. Who do you think you are? You're intolerant, hateful people. And look what else is happening. As it gets hotter, as the heat gets turned up, quite a few Catholics are drifting with the culture because they don't want to take the heat. And we're losing an amazing opportunity to stand with Jesus right now. It's really foolish. It's so unwise. And if we don't see it, we're going to miss the most important things Jesus wants us to do. And we're going to have to appear before the judgment seat of God on it. That's important. Trust in the Lord. Don't be afraid. If men reject you because what you believe they deem is hateful, blessed are you. Peter says, rejoice. Don't run from it. Rejoice in it.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Well, wrapping up here today, I promised that I would talk about Augustus to Humani Vitae. The Emperor Augustus in his reign in the early century of right after the birth of our Lord, right in the time of our Lord, tried desperately to fix the population problem in Rome. He couldn't. The Christians could. Humani Vitae stands as a testament to how the church can transform culture, how we can really make a difference in rebuilding a culture that has so often forgotten the family. The Romans failed to do it. Humani Vitae can. In this hour, we've had that conversation with Dr. John Grabowski and also with Dr. Brad Wilcox about homelessness, childlessness in the cities. Let's give a lot of thought to how we can, as Catholics, solve this problem, and it starts with the family. We also had an update from events in the Vatican from Solène Tadier, so my thanks to her. It is always a pleasure to fill in for Al. I'm Matthew Bunsen. Take care, and God bless.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Weekdays at 10 a.m., there's more to life.
Feeling good.
Are you struggling with feelings of anger, sadness, or anxiety? We're going to help you get a handle on those emotions and start to feel good again.
Weekdays at 10 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Evidences for Christianity. All religions have myths and ideas about a great God who made the world. But no religious teachers except Jesus Christ ever claimed to be that man. G.K. Chesterton said this about that.
The most that any religious prophet had ever said was that he was the true servant of such a being. But that the Creator was present in the detailed daily life of the Roman Empire, that is something utterly unlike anything else in nature. It is the one great startling statement that man has made since he spoke his first articulate word instead of barking like a dog.
And that's Evidence for Christianity. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under Resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. Each week we go into the Ave Maria CD library. We pull on a talk or two to see what our Lord might have to say to us. Most of these talks are recorded at area gatherings and conferences. Most of the speakers are nationally known. The topics are varied, but they are all centered on the